Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Shri Bhakti Vedanta Ki
Jai.
Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki
Jai.
Giriraj Maharaj Ki
Jai.
Janitai Gopremanandi. Welcome back to all those who are joining us for the first time this year. Good to see you again. Hare Krishna. Okay. So, joining us live from Sydney is Sharon Mukhi Mataji. Sharon Mukhi Mataji Ki.
Jai.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much for including me. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
All glory to Telstra. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, Prabhu, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you, Chaitan Prabhu.
So we're just going to do a little introduction in terms of giving out some course materials, so you'll just have to be patient for a few minutes. But then after that, we'll begin to speak. Okay, so just wait patiently. Okay, so... for those who need the course material, we will hand it out now. If you weren't here last night, take the course material if you're going to be doing the exams. If you're not doing the exams, then it's not so necessary to have it. If you need it, just take it, pass it on, and pass it around. If you need the course material. And last night we had a introductory class. The introductory class last night was an orientation lesson about the structure and nature of this course. This is the Bhakti Vedanta course. It is Canto 7 to 12 for the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this course will be taken, you could say, more seriously than the previous courses, Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Vaibhav. Any of the Mataji's need the books? Did I go them last month? Oh, good. Special guest of honor. Sarada Raja Mataji. Sarada Raja Mataji.
Yeah.
Now the grandmother and the grandfather are right here. Do you need the course
material?
Yes, sir.
Yes,
sir. Anyone else? You got the course material? Okay. So, I would advise that the devotees who missed last night, they should listen to the orientation lesson. It'll be on the internet in the next 2 days. So please listen to it because it is an important orientation lesson. It's not the same as every year, even though we do it every year. We're covering some fresh ground because this is a new course, which is the Bhakti Vedanta course. So there will be certain standards which will be required of everyone who's taking the course, who's taking the exam from the course. Basically, you could say the entire situation is going to be more serious, the study is going to be more serious. It's a higher level of study now. And there'll be more, if one is taking the course and doing the exams, there will be higher expectations of the students. So you should make yourself aware of what those expectations are by listening to the orientation lesson. So that will be on the internet today or tomorrow.
Do you have a new aspect of a few examples so it might be a couple of years in
the course? Because we need like a third tier. Okay, so, okay. So Ben, how long do you suggest?
5 minutes.
Okay, by the weekend, we'll have our lesson here, so please listen before the Rathi Yatra. Okay, try to listen. Okay, so tonight is a summary of Canto 6. Last year, we covered Canto 6. So tonight we'll go through an overview of the entire canto, just to put us back to
Can you hear us? Sharon Mookie, can you hear us? What's that? Okay. Can you hear me now? Okay. So, this will be a summary study of Canto 6, just to give us, to connect us to the Bhagavatam, to what we've studied up until now. Just so that we can understand the relationship between Canto 6 and Canto 7, and we're up to now. So tonight we'll go through Canto 6. If you have any points or if there's any questions that you need to ask while we're going through Canto 6, you can do that. Next week, on Monday night, we'll begin Canto 7. The Bhakti Vedanta course will officially begin next week. Okay, so what is the subject matter of Canto 6? Poshana. So there are 10 subject matters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, one of the 10 subject matters is Poshana. Poshana means protection of the Lord towards his devotees, how the Lord protects his devotees. And there are four parts to Canto 6. First of all, we have how the Lord is protecting Ajanya. The second part is a little bit of the story of how Daksha is progenating or populating the universe, because this has been left over from previous cantos, where we hear about Daksha and the Prachetas, end of Canto 4. And then we hear about the story of Ritrasura, and then after that we hear about Ritrasura's previous life, in which he was Chitraketu. So how the Lord protected Chitraketu, how he protected Ritrasura, how he protected Ajanya, and how he protected Lord Indra himself. So, the first chapter of the sixth canto, does anyone have the title? The history of the life of Ajanya. So in the very first chapter, it is connected to the end of the fifth canto. What is the final chapter of the fifth canto? The hellish planets. Okay. What did you say?
Mispronounced.
Okay. So, the hellish planets. Like that. So, we hear a description of the hellish planets. Now, in the beginning of Canto 6, Shukadeva Goswami is being asked by Maharaj Parikshit, then how does one atone? How does one perform prayaschitta, or atonement, so that he does not have to enter into the hellish planets? He does not have to take birth in this hellish situation. Now, Shukadeva Goswami, he answers that one needs to perform prayaschitta. Prayaschitta means one needs to perform atonement. If one atones, then one can destroy the reactions of one's sins. But actually, he's just testing his disciple, because his disciple is a very advanced Vaishnava, a pure devotee, and extremely intelligent. So he knows exactly what the guru is doing. Sometimes the guru will test the disciple. Sometimes the guru will see if the disciple is actually understanding something, by maybe speaking another thing or doing another thing, when he's testing the disciple. He wants to see that the disciple actually understands things properly. So, Shukadeva Goswami tests Maharaj Parikshit. He says, prayaschitta is the methodology if you want to purify yourself. But Maharaj Parikshit is very intelligent. He understands that it is not by simply performing prayaschitta that the sinful desires will be destroyed or they will leave the heart. You may destroy the reactions to the sin, but the desire still remains. And Maharaj Parikshit gives the example of the elephant. The elephant will go into the water, cleanse himself, and he'll come out, and then he'll roll in the dust again. So the inclination is not destroyed. So Maharaj Parikshit is saying that even though you may do prayaschitta, but still your desire for sinful activity still remains. So therefore, it needs something more powerful. So Shukadeva Goswami then describes that the actual process is bhakti. It is bhakti yoga. It is devotional service, which will destroy the impure desires within our heart. Like the desire to perform. That's true. Yeah, he says karma, and then he says, if one cannot do prayaschitta, then one should do dhyana. Separate himself from the body through knowledge, like that. And then, when that is rejected by Maharaj Pariksit, then he says that one should do bhakti, or devotional service. So in order to emphasize the point, when we're preaching and when we're giving classes, if we want to illustrate our point, what do we do? So what's one of the things we can do? You give an example. Something to illustrate the story, or illustrate your point. So in order to illustrate his point, then he gives the example of the life of Ajamil. So Ajamil was a very sinful personality. And this pastime is also especially placed right in the middle of the Bhagavatam. Because the sixth canto is the middle of the Bhagavatam, the middle of the 12 cantos. One of the Jiva Goswami explains one of the principal purposes of the Bhagavatam being spoken is to glorify the holy name. That is one of the main purposes of the speaking of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, there are verses which glorify chanting the holy name. At the very end of the Bhagavatam, there are verses which describe the glories of chanting the holy name, such as Kaleya Doshinidhi, Raja, and other verses. The very final verse of the Bhagavatam actually glorifies chanting the holy name. And in the middle, the story of Ajamil is there to glorify the power of chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is our principal method of purification in the process of bhakti. So, Ajamil was a very sinful person. He was a Brahmana, actually, by birth. And after some improper association or a satsanga. In other words, he saw a prostitute embracing a sudra in a ditch while he was walking towards his home. Now, Prabhupada points out what Ajamil saw once in his life, we see every day. Practically. So what is our hope? Ajamil got polluted and contaminated, completely taken away from the path of bhakti, and he only saw this once in his life. But we see it every day. So that shows how important it is to be strict in your sadhana. If you're not strict in your sadhana, you'll become very influenced by these things, by the material energy. Everywhere you go, you'll see material visions and material sense objects which will distract you from the path of bhakti. Material energy is very powerful. These days, practically all the advertisements which you use are very materialistic in their nature. Very materialistic. So it becomes very distracting. It is not conducive. This material world is not conducive for practicing the path of bhakti. So then what do we do? What is the most obvious answer? Chant Hare Krishna is very good. I was thinking of another way of dealing with it. That's a very good way of dealing with it, yes. I was thinking that you could move to the farm. Because we don't have these kind of advertisements there. Internet works very slowly. Your mobile phones hardly work at all. There's not so much distraction there. So if that is not practical, then you should chant Hare Krishna and associate with devotees. Then you should purify your consciousness. Yes, sir.
On the farm also they're getting rid of distractions.
Like what?
So many distractions.
Like what?
Name one. Naming.
Name one. Just one. Give me just one example.
Even animals you can see.
That's true. That's true. Sometimes you see one. So, in order to purify ourselves, Prabhupada says, our sadhana is like inoculation. Just like when you enter into a contaminated part of the hospital, first you must inoculate yourself. Because the people in that part of the hospital, they have disease. So you don't catch that disease, you have to take inoculation, you have to take some injection, which will protect you from catching that disease when you enter into that situation. So Srila Prabhupada says that our sadhana is like inoculation. When we go into the material atmosphere, we don't get affected by it so deeply because we are purifying ourselves by a strict sadhana. And then Srila Prabhupada says that after purifying yourself, he said once a year, a devotee should go to the holy dharma. They should go to Mayapur, Puri, Vrindavan. So if you would like to come, please let us know. We're planning a trip this year, a special Bhakti Vedanta class trip, a field excursion. For 18 days, we'll travel to the holy places by the mercy of Krishna. So if you would all like to come, then please let us know. But regularly, Prabhupada says, once a year we should go to the holy dharma to purify ourselves. Prabhupada says you should bathe in the Ganga once a year and purify yourself. So any sins which are there, any contamination which is there in your consciousness, that will be destroyed. So you can come back and you can be in the material energy once again. You can spread Krishna consciousness with strength. Prabhupada actually said the sannyasi should go to the holy dharma 3 times a year. And this is Jayapataka Swami for years. He's been doing like a circuit. He goes out for 3 or 4 months, and he comes back to Mayapur. And he goes out for 3 or 4 months, and he comes back to Mayapur. He's been doing that for years and years and years and years. So that is the program. Now we should preach Krishna consciousness, and once a year we should go to the holy dharma, purify ourselves. And we should have strict sadhana in the meantime. Otherwise we'll end up like a jamyo. We'll fall down to material consciousness. So because he was not deeply practicing bhakti, because he was more attached to rules and regulations in a what we call smarter fashion, he was acting like a smarter brahmana, which means he was attached to smriti, all the rules and regulations of shastra, but not so much bhakti. Then when he saw the prostitute, even though he was born in a very good family, even though he was following the rules and regulations of the scriptures very carefully, still his consciousness became attracted to the prostitute. So much so that he employed her in his house. She worked in the house for some time, and then he was having illicit connections with her, and eventually he left his wife, who was a brahmani, a devotee, a qualified person, and then he took the prostitute as the wife. And then in order to maintain the prostitute, he had to do so many sinful activities. Stealing, and I think even killing, and doing so many improper things. And having so many children with the prostitute, up until the age of 88. 88, he's still having children. His son Ajami was only 2 or 3 years old, and he was 88, still having children. Very sinful. So then, it is said that he was about to leave his body at the age of 88, and at that moment, when he was leaving his body, the Yamadutas came to get him, because he'd been very sinful. So sinful people, they are taken by the Yamadutas to Yamaloka, which is a planet called Pluto, which is in the southern portion of the universe, like that. So you go to that place, dragged, your soul is dragged in your subtle body to Yamaloka by the Yamadutas. So at that time, when he saw the Yamadutas, he became very frightened, and he began to call out to his son, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. His son was very close, so he began to call out to the son, and then the son, by chanting that holy name of the son, Narayana, he purified himself. It describes in the Shastra that by chanting once the holy name of Krishna, or Vishnu, or Narayana, or Ram, by chanting this name once, you can destroy more sins than you can commit in countless lifetimes. So all of his sins were eradicated just by that once chanting, Narayana, Narayana, like that. Prabhupada points out that's why in India, even to this day, they give the children spiritual names. They call the children by the names of Vishnu or the names of great devotees of God. To purify, every time you call, then you purify the child. So, Ajani, he called out. So at that time, when he was calling Narayana, he purified himself, and the Vishnu Dutas arrived. And when the Vishnu Dutas arrived, then they said to the Yamadutas, do not touch him. And the Yamadutas were struck. Who are these four persons who have suddenly arrived? No one has ever stopped us. But they're so powerful, they're so effulgent, that we cannot resist them. We cannot oppose them. The Vishnu Duta said, do not touch this person. We will take him. So then they said, who are you? So then, there was a conversation which took place between the Vishnu Dutas and the Yama Dutas. So the Vishnu Dutas asked the Yama Dutas to explain the process of religion. So they were explaining it according to a Vedic understanding, or like a Karmakanda understanding, the process of religion. But then the Vishnu Dutas said, no, actually there is something higher. You do not understand religion properly. You do not understand Sanatana Dharma. And they began to explain the glories of chanting the holy name of Krishna. Of chanting the holy name, or the process of bhakti. So they explained to the Yamadutas that actually one who chants the holy name is immediately delivered and liberated from the influence of the material energy. So the Yamadutas, they went back to Yamaraj. And the Vishnu Dutas, they took Ajamil to his next body, which was in Hardwar, which is in a country called
India.
No. So in India, he was taken to Hardwar, and then he perfected his life. Because he understood that he had wasted his life up until that point. Actually, he didn't die. He actually lived further. His life was given more years because the sins were destroyed. So he was taken to Hardwar, and he fully engaged in devotional service. And because of fully engaging in devotional service, he purified his consciousness completely. At the end of his life, he was taken back to Vishnu Loka, or Vaikuntha. This is the power of bhakti. Yam yam bhakti smaram bhavam. Whatever you remember at the time of death, you will attain it without fail. So then, you had a point.
How much longer did he live?
I'm not sure. I can't remember if it was mentioned exactly. He was 88, so I think it said that he lived out the remainder of his life once the sins were taken away. So I'm not sure how long it was. But it says that he became perfect in those final few years that he had in Hardwar, and then he became pure, and then he went back to the spiritual world. So then chapter 3 is called?
Why were there four Yamadutas?
Why were there four Yamadutas? Vishnudus. Three Yamadus and four Vishnudus. I'm not sure why.
You sure. Mentioned because of Narayana, there are four syllables. Narayana. Okay. That's why there are four Vishnudus. And the Yamadutas came in three because he was sinful by mind, word, body, and words.
I mentioned that. So I said that the Yamadutas, they represent mind, body, and words. And the Vishnudutas represent
Narayana.
Narayana. That's okay. Not that. Must have been a Vishnu Chakra, Fireball's commentary. Something like that. Okay, so then the third chapter is called? So the Yamadutas, they go back to Yamaraj and they ask Yamaraj, how is it that we have been stopped? Who is greater than you? who has authority, which is more powerful than yours, that they can stop us, your servants, from taking a sinful soul back to Yamaloka to be punished. Now he begins to explain to them the actual process of religion. He says, actually there is someone much more powerful than you. His name is? Narayana. Vishnu, Krishna, Hari, Ram. He's much more powerful. So he describes that I'm simply his servant, and all of the great controllers of the universe are simply servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he said that we do not have any power or any jurisdiction, because all of us are subservient to the Lord and his desire. So he said, in order to understand, he said, you should never take the devotees again. Whenever you approach a devotee, someone who is wearing the Kanti Mala, the neck beads, someone who is chanting the names of Krishna with devotion, you should never touch them again. So you must understand the principle of Sanatana Dharma or Bhakti Yoga. That someone who is engaged in this process of bhakti, they are purified. They are exempt from going to Yamaloka. So he said, never touch them again. He said, in order to understand the process of bhakti yoga, you must learn it from the Mahajanas, the 12 great authorities.
These three verses are in Dharma Sutra Kshamakam. Then he says, what is the supreme religion for the say Vetavan Avalokitam, the chanting of the Holy Universe? Then after that he says, how to learn this is through the Mahajanas. Three verses are in
Dharma. Yeah. So who are the Mahajanas? Brahma, Shiva, Kapila, the Kumaras, Narada, Bali, Manu, Janak, Prahlad, Bhishma, Yamaraj himself. Okay. These are the 12 Mahajanas. I think I've got the 12. Brahma, Shiva, Narada, the Kumaras, Kapila, Manu, then Prahlad, Bhishma, Janak, Bali, Shukadeva, and Yama himself. So they're the 12 Mahajanas. Okay. So by their authority, if you learn their teachings, then you will not be confused in the matter of what is Sanatana Dharma or religion. So then he said to the Yamadutas, and you will not make the mistake again. So that is the pastime of Ajamya. So Poshanam is the subject matter of the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. So we see that the Lord protects his devotees. If you remember Krishna at the time of death, you will be protected. The Lord's mercy is there. Even Ajamya is very sinful, because he remembered Krishna at the end of his life. That was so powerful, that remembrance, that it destroyed all the ill effects of his previous karma.
You mentioned if you follow all the Mahajanas, and that's the way. So, can I write that the Bhagavad Gita covers some portion of the other, all the Mahajanas?
Brahma is covered, Shiva is covered, Narada is covered.
Kumara
is covered, Kapila is covered, Manu is covered, Shukadeva is covered, Bhishma. Bali is covered. Prahlad is covered. And then Yamaraj is covered. And Janak's not covered in detail. He's probably the only one who's not covered in detail. He's mentioned in the ninth canto, but his teachings are not elaborated. Actually, in the ninth canto, Shukadeva Goswami says, when he begins the pastimes of Ramachandra, he says, I will not go into detail about the pastimes of Ramachandra, because the great sage Valmiki has already described these pastimes, so I will not go into them in detail. So that's why Janak's teachings are not considered elaborated. So the Ramayana is an extension of the Bhagavatam. In order to get the full understanding of the ninth canto, then you read the Ramayana, and that will describe the pastimes.
In the other Gita, it was mentioned, about Krishna gives an example of Jarasandha
So he's also mentioned in the Prabhupada Gita.
In the Gita? Yeah, he's one of the Mahajanas, one of the great. So there must be instructions by Janak in the Ramayana. There must be instructions. I've never read the Ramayana, so I don't know. I've only read like summaries. I've never read the details, but there must be instructions by Janak. Okay. So after protecting the Jamil and showing us the power of the Lord's protection, then in the fourth chapter, we have, what is it called? The Hamsaguya prayers. So we hear about how the Prachetas, they were mentioned at the end of the fourth canto. They reappear again in the sixth canto. They were under the ocean for thousands of years during tapasya, austerity, and they became very powerful. They came out of the ocean, and when they came out of the ocean, they saw the earth was covered with
trees.
So they became disturbed because there was no agricultural land, no clear land. So with the fire of their austerity, they began to shoot fire at all the trees, and then the trees began to catch on fire and they began to burn. They were very disturbed, so they were destroying a large amount of the forest. So then the moon god, who is the ruler of the trees, the presiding deities of the trees, he came and he said, please be pacified. Please do not destroy all the trees. Protect the vegetation. Save the trees. So then he said, I will give you a daughter so that you can populate the universe. So he gave them one daughter who was very qualified. And she became the wife of the Prachetas, and then they could populate the universe with this daughter of the moon god, Soma. So then we hear that Daksha, he is also performing great tapasya. Daksha actually goes to the Himalaya because Daksha has children what are they called?
It's Hariyaswas and Kavalaswas. The first set of children are called Hariyaswas, the second set of children are called Kavalaswas.
Okay. So he has these groups of children. He wants to populate the universe, that is his seva, to populate the universe. So he sends his children away to do some austerity. But then someone comes to preach to them. Narada. So when Narada arrives, then he preaches to them. Why are you wasting your energy? You're doing so much austerity for what? Just for family life? Just so that you can populate the universe? Why don't you use all this austerity that you're doing to become self-realized? So the whole 1,000 of them, they become brahmacharis. And they never return home. So then Daksha becomes very disturbed. So then he approaches... he has another 10,000 children. And he sends them away to also do austerity. But then Narada approaches them and he convinces them to all be brahmacharis. So all of his children, 11,000 of them, become brahmacharis. So then he curses Narada. He says that because wherever you go, you cause trouble. Wherever you go, It is inappropriate for you to take my children, who were going to assist me to populate this universe, you turn them all into brahmacharis, because this is very inappropriate and you don't understand religion properly, then I curse you that you cannot stay in any one place for more than 3 days. And Narada, he was thinking that actually Daksha does not understand, he says, I do not understand religion, but actually he does not understand religion. His higher religion than just populating the universe and doing dharma is bhakti. Bhakti is the fifth purushartha. Higher than dharma, artha, karma, and moksha is bhakti. It is the fifth goal of human life. So Daksha did not understand this properly, so he cursed Narada. Now Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that he has transferred that curse to all of his disciples. Actually, not to all the disciples, but he says to the sannyasis, his sannyas disciples. And who got who got the biggest part of the curse? Jabhatthaka Swami got the biggest part. When Prabhupada transferred the curse to his sannyasi disciples, Jabhatthaka Swami got the biggest amount. He could not stay anywhere for more than 3 days. He was constantly traveling, constantly like that. So Prabhupada has transferred this curse to his followers. He told us that I also have the same curse. That the parents of my disciples are also cursing me. That you cannot stay in one place for a long period of time. Because you're destroying our family life. You're taking our children and you're turning it into devotees. Prabhupada said, I took that curse and then I transferred it to my sannyasi disciples, and they also have the curse. They will travel constantly, they cannot stay in one place, and they will take their children from the families and turn them into devotees. So then, finally, Daksha, he has 60 daughters, and then he marries the 60 daughters to the various sages within the universe, and then they begin to populate the universe. And then all the different races of the universe are created. The Nagas, the snakes, the Apsaras, the Gandhavas, the Siddhas, the Charanas, all the different types of races are created at this point in time. So the next chapter is called? Yeah, is that chapter 7? Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah.
See, Daksha did curse Naraji, but Naraji didn't take very long to convince the Shastra children of Daksha. They were already purified, and they were convinced very quickly. She didn't have to convince them for a long time. So, what is the meaning of the curse?
Sorry, I didn't get the point.
See,
Maybe he did stay with them for a period of time. Maybe he was with them for... It doesn't mention that he wasn't with them. Maybe he was with them for a period of time. Maybe he was preaching to them for many, many days. So he said, you cannot stay anywhere for more than 3 days. You have to keep moving. Otherwise, you cause too many problems.
Okay.
So then the seventh chapter is called?
Yeah,
Indra offends Brihaspati. So, Indra was being worshipped as the king of Swarga. So in Swarga, or the heavenly realm, he's considered the highest personality. But while he was being worshipped and adored by all the members of the demigods, it says that Indra is 10 times more powerful than all the other demigods. He is extremely powerful. And his ultimate weapon is the thunderbolt, which is the most powerful of weapons in the heavenly realm. And the palm of his hand is blackish, because he's always holding a thunderbolt. And the thunderbolt is very hot. So he's a very powerful personality. So when his guru entered, he became proud and intoxicated by the pratishta, by the adoration that he was receiving. He became proud. He had this anatta pratishta, which means he wanted adoration. So much so that when his guru came, he failed to offer respect to his spiritual master. So he did not get down and offer obeisances to the guru. So Brihaspati, understanding his proud nature, he left immediately. And then Indra understood when he saw that Brihaspati left, he immediately went to find him. So sometimes when the guru deals with us, the guru doesn't always chastise us. Sometimes he just remains silent. To show us an example that he is displeased with us. Remember I gave that example about Harisori Prabhu? He went onto the roof and he locked Prabhupada on the roof. Prabhupada, finally when they got Prabhupada off the roof, Prabhupada was so angry, he didn't even say anything. His lips were just quivering. And remember when we did the exam and all of you wrote the same answer? At least 12 people out of 20 wrote exactly the same answer on the exam. Okay. So that won't be acceptable in the Bhakti Vedanta course. You'll lose marks. You'll lose marks if you do that. You can lose marks. Prabhupada said, explain the philosophy in your own words. Don't just all write the same thing. If one person does it, that's okay, but if all of you do it, then the first exam I mark, they will be okay, but the ones after that, then. Like that. So if you're not the first person to hand your exam, then be very careful. Usually Chaitanya's first because he's the quickest writer. His exam's usually the first one. So. But after him, don't any of you write the same thing. So he went looking for Brihaspati, and Brihaspati was very upset, so he disappeared. He made it impossible for Indra to find him. And Indra understood he'd offended the guru. Now when you offend a Vaishnava, because the spiritual master is the best of the Vaishnavas. Right? And when you offend a Vaishnava, a guru or any Vaishnava, there is an aparad committed. When you commit aparad, Krishna blocks his mercy to you. An aparad is like a barrier between you and Krishna's mercy. It doesn't mean that you lose Krishna's mercy. It means you cannot access it for a point in time if you commit an offense, especially if you're a devotee. So because he had offended Brihaspati, the guru, he became weak. He didn't have Krishna's mercy. So what happened is Shukracharya, he found out, he is the guru of the Asuras, the cousins of the demigods. So then he said, now attack them. Because the Deva says, the demigods, the Suras, are 10 times more powerful than the Asuras. So normally they cannot defeat the Suras, the demigods. But on this occasion they could defeat them because they become weakened by offending the guru. That's how powerful offending the devotees is, offending the spiritual master. So they were attacked and they were overthrown and defeated by the Asuras. Because the Asuras, Prabhupada said, to their credit, their good quality was they were worshipping their guru very nicely. This shows the power of worshipping the spiritual master and respecting the devotees. Even though they were demons, because they worshipped the guru very nicely, they became so powerful, they could overtake the demigods. They conquered the demigods. So then, the demigods, they, being defeated, they approached Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma instructed them, he said, that you must worship Vishwarupa. You must find a new spiritual master. And if you worship him properly, then you will become powerful again, and then you can destroy the demigod, the demons. So, the demigods, they went and found Vishwarupa, and then they asked him, they said, please, can you become our spiritual master? So Vishwarupa, he had 3 heads. And they worshipped him very nicely, and he accepted the demigods as his disciples, and he said, I will perform yajnas on your behalf.
He's related both sides, like the Dasharatha's side, mother's side and father's side, that was his problem.
Yeah. So he had connection to both the demons and the demigods. Mm. So then chapter 8 is called?
The Narayan
Kavach
Shield.
So the Narayan Kavach Shield, Vishwarupa, he instructed that Indra should chant this mantra, the Narayan Kavach, which is given in the 9th chapter, and he should become powerful. He should become protected. So he gave him this special mantra, which is given. in the 8th chapter, actually. So then if one chants this Narayan Kavacha, it will protect you on the battlefield. It will protect you from harm. So quite often devotees, they chant these mantras. Nishringa Kavacha. Nishringa Kavacha Prabhu is here in Melbourne. I saw him just a few minutes ago. Okay. So you chant this Nishringa Kavacha, or this Narayan Kavacha, different mantras, and this will protect you. Or you can just chant the Hare Krishna mantra, very sincerely, and it will protect you. So he chanted this mantra to protect him from the demons. Then, in the beginning of chapter 9, what is chapter 9 called? What is it? Appearance of the demon Vritrasura. So, Indra, he found out that while Vishwarupa was doing oblations for the demigod, he was also chanting some mantras on behalf of the... So what are you doing down there? You doing some picture? Okay. So then, he was also doing some oblation or chanting some mantras on behalf of the demons. So Indra became very upset that he was supposed to be worshipping the Lord on behalf of the demigods, but he was also doing some worship on behalf of the demons. So he became very upset, and he used the thunderbolt to decapitate him. He removed his three heads. Okay. So then the father of Vishwarupa, his name was Trashta, he became very upset. He said, because Indra has killed my son, I will kill Indra. So then he did a yajna to invoke one demon who would then destroy Indra.
His reaction to be shared.
That's good, yeah. Because when Indra killed Vishwarupa, then he had to incur a sinful reaction for killing a brahmana. So in order to dissipate that sin, he sent it in four places. He gave some of the sinful reactions to the land, and that's why we have deserts. Right? He gave some to the trees, and that's why some of them have sap. Right, instead of having like honey coming from this, like sap, which is not, you can't take it, you can't eat it. And then to the water, some water is impure. It says when it has bubbles in it, it's impure, you can't drink it. And then finally to the women. So then they have their period. And when they have their period, they're contaminated. So these sinful reactions were given to those four areas. Then, Twashka, he chanted the mantras, but because he did not chant them properly, in the Vedic times you have to chant the mantras very carefully. And if you chant them perfectly, you will get the perfect result. But we see in the Vedic literature, sometimes when the mantras are not chanted perfectly, the opposite result comes. Just like there's the example of Kumbhakarna, who was the brother of Ravana. So he was chanting a mantra, so he did not have to sleep, but because he did not chant it properly, then the opposite effect came, and he had to sleep for 6 months at a time. So just by the mispronunciation of the word, then the mantra becomes modified, and then you get a different result. So because Twashta, because he chanted the mantra slightly imperfectly, he wanted enemies that would kill Indra, then it was modified. And then the result was Indra's enemy would be. So it's not that someone who would kill Indra necessarily, but an enemy of Indra. So it was changed. But nevertheless, the great demon whose name was Vritrasura, he was born. And Vritrasura was an extremely powerful demon. So then, the demigods, when they see Vritrasura, they become so frightened from the potency of Vritrasura that they leave the battlefield and they approach Lord Brahma. And they say, Lord Brahma, what shall we do? How shall we defeat this particular personality? They are advised that they need to approach Dadichi. And Dadichi, I don't know if it was Brahmaris, I think it was Vishnu. Yeah, but was it Brahmaris who gave them instructions?
No,
Vishnu gave the instructions. I can't remember the details of that. Narayan gave. Okay. So they were instructed that they approached Dadichi. Dadichi was a great sage. And when they approached Dadichi, they said to him that we need to take your bones from your body. And from your bones, if we take your bones and we create a thunderbolt, Vishwakarma creates a thunderbolt, Indra can then defeat this great demon whose name is Richasura. Now this is, in the Bhagavatam, we see examples of pure devotional service, or selfless devotional service. Hands up if you would give up your own body if you were asked to by the Lord Himself or by the spiritual master. Two will do. If the guru asks you, or if the spiritual master asks you to give up your body, would you do it? If it wasn't painful. It was not painful. Very
difficult.
What's that?
Yeah,
that's it. But still, it's like an ultimate level of sacrifice. Right? It's like when Krishna said to Narada, he said that I have a headache, so I want you to approach all the devotees and ask them for the dust of their feet to smear upon my head, and that will fix my headache. And when Narada went to all the different devotees, everyone said, no, we cannot put the dust of our feet on the head of Krishna. Hands up if a Chintaroopa Mataji came to you and said, we need the dust of your feet to put on Balaba's head. Hands up who would do it. Right? We can't imagine doing that, taking the dust of our feet and putting it on the deity's head. What would we think? We will go to hell. All the devotees said that. We will go to hell. Mm-hmm. But when the gopis were approached, right, the gopis said, no, you take the dust. Right? And Narada said, but you'll go to hell. They said, we don't care, but Krishna has a headache. So if you can take away that headache, then we'll worry about hell later on. So this is actually bhakti. This is the highest level of devotion, as the Bhagavatam will teach us. So here in the Bhagavatam, before we get to the 10th canto, we're hearing about what is pure devotion. Right? Dadichi is fully selfless. Fully selfless. We always say, you know, I will do anything for my guru. But would you actually do anything for your guru? Right? We say we do anything for Krishna, but would you actually do anything for Krishna? But Dadichi is showing us complete surrender. Complete ahotuki bhakti, or unmotivated devotion. No motivation. If the Lord is instructing that I give my bones so that His servants can destroy this demon, then let them do it. So He gave His body, right? And they took the bones from His body, they forged a thunderbolt, a lightning bolt, and then Indra was able to use that to defeat Vritrasura. So then, the next chapter 10, it describes how Dadichi gave up his bones. And then the demigods approached Vritrasura. Now chapter 11 is called The Transcendental Qualities of Vritrasura. So in this chapter, he is on the battlefield with Indra. And the demigods are being defeated by Vritrasura, but the demigods are defeating the Asuras. And because they're defeating the Asuras begin to run away. And Vritrasura, he says to them, he said, actually this is cowardice. He said, this is not appropriate. You should never leave your duty. And this is something we should learn from the example of Vritrasura and from the Bhagavatam. We should never give up our duty, no matter how difficult it is. Whatever service we are giving by the spiritual master, by the Vaishnavas, ultimately by Krishna himself, through the guru and through the Vaishnavas, we should never give that service up under any circumstances.
He also teaches the etiquettes in the battlefield, how one should, like if somebody is here on time, then you should not kill from the person and you should not kill from them from the back. So this is not a proper courageous thing, so etiquettes in the battlefield here.
Okay. I personally follow these things. I never kill anyone from the back or... Yes.
You know how Indra killed Vitrasura in the battlefield, and because he was a devotee, he ensured a simple reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, we have so many killed brahmanas, you know, Dronacharya, and Krishna was killed, and no one ensured heavy reactions like Indra. And they were brahmanas on the battlefield.
Bhishma died when he chose to die. Drona was killed by Drishtadyumna. Drona was killed by Drishtadyumna. And Drishtadyumna also died.
On top of it, when he was defenseless and he put the weapons down.
Yeah, and Drishtadyumna also died, so maybe that was his reaction. Maybe that was his reaction for doing like that.
But
so.
It doesn't say. And usually
no, it doesn't say. But no one approved. When Drishtadyumna killed Dronacharya, Arjuna and all the others, no one approved. No one approved of him being killed the way he was killed.
Well, but Krishna told him to kill him that way, and Krishna also told Indra how to kill Vritrasura.
Yeah, so then what is higher? The Lord's desire?
Well, if it comes to his thing, I cannot...
No, but what I'm saying is the point that we have to learn from the Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata. What is the highest thing? The highest thing is the instruction of the spiritual master and Krishna. Because Yudhisthira was asked by Krishna to lie. But Yudhisthira would not lie. He disobeyed Krishna. And because he disobeyed Krishna, normally his chariot wheels would not touch the ground. But as soon as he disobeyed Krishna, his chariot hit the ground. So Krishna was teaching us in the Mahabharata that more important than following Dharma is following bhakti. Is following Krishna's instructions.
Connected to what you're saying, Prabhu, to what's confusing me.
Okay.
Because it also Krishna told Indra, gave advice how to heal Vritrasura. So why, he advised him how to do it, what to do, and then he infused simple reaction. It's not clear to me what the difference between these two things, what's the main principle.
Maybe ask like Banaswami.
Okay.
Banaswami is coming in March, so ask him, because he knows all the answers.
Given the last purpose, that is the Lord's plan that he should take Rukrasura back home back to your head, that's why all his pastimes are doing. That's what I
remember. That still doesn't answer Rasa's question, so you can ask Banaswami.
You are a Brahman by. And not by name or by a birth. You are Brahman by your own birth.
Vritrasura is not even a Brahman. He's actually a pure devotee. So he's higher than a Brahman. It's a good question. I can't think of an answer right now. So.
But Dronacharya was a Brahman, but he didn't behave like a Brahman.
No, he was qualified. Drona was qualified.
Yeah, he was qualified, but he didn't do justice.
Yeah, there were some things that Drona did which were wrong. That's true.
Yes, that was not Brahman.
Yeah, but some of the things he did was also good. Okay. Anyway, just ask Banaswami because we're not going to come up with an answer here. So. Okay, so he gives many transcendental instructions, and ultimately, Vritrasura is teaching us also the same thing as the Dichi. What did the Dichi teach us?
One should know
He taught us a completely selfless service attitude. That he would put Krishna's desires before his own desire. And Richasura is teaching exactly the same thing. He will put Krishna's desire. If Krishna desires that he dies at this moment, he will put that desire before his own desire. So then, in the next chapter, which is chapter 12, what is chapter 12 called? His glorious death. So, he fights with Indra. So Richasura throws a club at Indra. And when he throws the club, Indra destroys the club with his thunderbolt. And then he cuts off one of the arms of Richasura. And then Richasura, with his other hand, Indra throws a club, he catches the club, and he uses the club to hit Airavata, the elephant. And the elephant goes back 14 meters. And then Indra is hit so hard that he drops his thunderbolt. So a warrior, if he drops his weapon, he will not pick up that weapon in front of the other warrior. Because it's considered that he's defeated. But then Richasura stops and he says, just pick it up. Right? That thunderbolt is meant to kill me. Pick it up and kill me. It is your destiny. So then he picks up the thunderbolt again. But then Richasura becomes huge and he swallows Indra and Airavata. And they go into his stomach. But because they're protected by the Narayan Kavacha, they do not become destroyed in the gastric juices. They go into the stomach. And then Richasura thinks, now Indra is dead. Because I have digested him. He's in my tummy. Indra, I've just had Indra for my dinner. So now I do not have to worry anymore. I will just go into meditation. So he goes into meditation. He begins to meditate. But Indra is not dead. And Indra understands that Richasura has stopped moving and fighting. So then he bursts out of his stomach with his thunderbolt. He comes out of the stomach and he looks up at the head and then he uses the thunderbolt. He throws it at Richasura's head and it takes 1 year to sever his head, to cut his head off. And then gradually he dies. But he understands that his only desire is to go back to Krishna, to go back to Vaikuntha, to serve Krishna. So he's not disturbed at all. So ultimately, Prahlada Nandaswami was making this point in the Bhagavatam class this morning. He was saying that a devotee, if he's a pure devotee, he's actually fully aloof from this material world. He has no attachment. So if the Lord wants him to live or die, that doesn't make any difference. Because he's not attached to this world. So that's what the Bhagavatam is leading us to. And that's what Krishna is leading us to in our lives. We should be feeling some detachment coming into our consciousness as time goes by. We should be feeling gradually that we're becoming less and less attached to this world. And less attached to this world and attached to Krishna. That feeling should be coming for all the devotees. So Richasura is showing us how to be completely detached from this world and attached to Krishna. So that is the glorious pastime of Richasura. So then chapter 13, what is chapter 13 called? Indra is pursued by sin personified. So sin personified, an ugly Chandala woman, is following him. And then he goes to Manasa Sarovara, and he goes deep into the water. He performs austerity to purify himself of the reactions of the sin for killing Richasura. But I think Prabhupada mentions actually he didn't have to do all this. That the sin could have been dissipated, but he accepted the sin and then like that. I think that's mentioned. So then, in the next chapter, chapter 14, we hear about Chitraketu. Because Maharaj Parikshit, he says to Shukadeva Goswami, who was this person in his previous life? How did such a powerful demon, how was it that he was such a great devotee? Who was he in his previous life? So then we hear about the pastime of Maharaj Chitraketu. So Chitraketu, he wanted to have a son. And it said that he had many, many wives. How many wives did he have? 10 million. This is the ultimate dream of every man. 10 million wives. This is unlimited happiness. One cannot give enough happiness. We need 10 million to be really happy. And he was still not happy. So this just shows that it doesn't matter how much you have in this world, you will not be happy. If you have one or if you have 10 million, you won't be happy. One cannot give you happiness and 10 million cannot give you happiness. You can't get happiness in this material world. He just wanted to have a son. So he was trying to have a son, but even though he had so many wives, it may not literally mean 10 million. Sometimes the Bhagavatam will say 10 million. I don't know if he had 10 million wives like that. But he had many, many, many wives. But he could not have any children, so he was unhappy. So Narada came to visit him. And when Narada saw him, he thought, "You do not look satisfied." And he said, "What is it? Why is it you're not satisfied? Is it this reason? Is it, you do not have a son?" So then... Was it on Guru the first time?
Actually, first when he comes, he wants to... The reason of his coming is to give transcendental knowledge, but when he sees that the king's mind is immersed in this material lamentation of the son, then he gives him first, but then later on he gives transcendental.
Yeah, but that's the issue of the
I was just testing you. I knew it was Angira. I was seeing if you were listening. So Angira came and he gave him a benediction. He said, "You will have a son, but the son will be Harshashoka." Harshashoka means? So then he thought, okay, that probably means that I will have the son, which is good, but he will be a little bit misbehaved. So that is bad. So I get both. But he didn't realize what would happen. So the co-wives, they became very envious. This is the nature of the material world. When someone has something that you do not have but you want, you become envious of them. Even sometimes as devotees, we become envious of other devotees because we don't have something that they have. So then the co-wives, they poisoned the child, the only child in the kingdom of the king, Chitraketu. And then Chitraketu found out that the child was dead, and he stumbled and fell into the child's bedroom, into the chamber. And then when he arrived, he was overcome with lamentation. He could not control his lamentation. Prabhupada actually says that psychologically it's natural that if the child dies, Prabhupada says even a very advanced devotee will become affected. So we don't have to think Chitraketu did something wrong necessarily. Yeah, it's natural, completely natural. So then, at that time, Angira and Narada, they arrived and they brought the child back to life. And the child began to instruct Chitraketu in transcendental knowledge. And Chitraketu, he became enlightened, as did his wife and as did the other queens. Then the next chapter is called? Okay, so... having heard that the relationships in this material world are not factual, the Bhagavatam describes in the second canto this material world is a dream. So all of the relationships we have in this material world are also temporary. They're not factual, they're a dream. That's something which I have not realized yet. Very advanced devotees, they realize this point. Everything in this material world is just a dream. They see it from a transcendental perspective. But for us, we lament. When we lose someone who we're attached to, we lament. But because he became fully detached... What was that?
There are relationships that exist, but on the material level, when we have retreat from the material point of view, the relationship ends at least, but the relationship too is only when we see it with the wrong from the point of view.
Yeah, if you're a devotee, then you don't see it like this. Devotees will see it differently. So,
he gives an example.
example of on the ocean, how the waves, they come together, the separates like that.
Yeah. Famous example. Yeah, very good. It was actually this was the story that made me a devotee when I read the Coming Back book.
Mm.
And I actually read this part. This is what made me become a devotee when I read this instruction of the Bhagavad Gita. Mm. So then, being instructed by Narada and Angira through the child, he becomes fully self-realized. And then he is given a mantra by Narada, which he begins to chant, and he becomes, within 1 week of chanting his rounds attentively, he sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if you chant your rounds attentively for 1 week, you will also see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But most of us can't even stay awake while we're chanting our rounds. But he chanted for 1 week and he saw Krishna. He saw Sankarshan. So when he saw Sankarshan, he was benedicted. So he became a pure devotee. So then the next chapter, 16, then 17. What is 17 called?
Mother Parvati
curses Chitraketu. So he was traveling around the universe with his wives on a celestial aeroplane, and they were all doing kirtan. He was a pure devotee now, and he was absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And he looked over the aeroplane, and then he saw that Shiva was giving Bhagavatam class and Parvati was sitting on his lap. And then he began to smile. He just said, look at Lord Shiva. This is not a very good example. You should not give class when your wife is sitting on your lap. It doesn't have the same effect. So he was smiling. He knew Lord Shiva was detached, but he was just smiling like that. He was thinking, this is not so appropriate. Right? And Lord Shiva looked up at him and he saw Chitraketu is laughing at me because I'm sitting here with the wife on the lap, but then he is going on the airplane with all his wives. So he's looking up and they're just smiling at each other because they understood each other. They both understood, they were both exalted. So they're just smiling. One was thinking, you're looking at me, but look at you. And the other one was thinking, you're looking at me, but sitting at the joint. But then Parvati, she became very upset. So you've cursed Lord Shiva. You have disrespected Lord Shiva. Huh? You will take birth as an asura in your next life. So Maharaj Chitraketu, he came down and then he offered obeisances to Parvati and he said, thank you for this curse. Yeah? He said, because you are the consort of Lord Shiva, who is one of the Mahajanas, who is a pure Vaishnavanam, Yata Shambhu. He is the greatest devotee. You are his consort, and if you've given me this curse, this must be Krishna's desire that I'm receiving this curse. So he actually said, this is my destiny, so he thanked her for that. And then when he left, then Shiva said to Parvati, he said, this is very inappropriate, you should not have spoken like this. You don't understand how advanced he is. And you should not have cursed him. But still the curse, he accepted it. And then the next life he became Vritrasura. So then, chapter 18 is called. So then we hear about how Diti and Aditi are the mother of the demigods and the demons. So Diti had two children who we heard about back in Canto 3. Their names were? Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Now Hiranyaksha was already killed in Canto 3 by Varaha. So then after her two children are killed, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, she takes a vow that she will perform austerity to kill Indra. Because Indra is being protected by Vishnu, who is the Lord of Indra, and Vishnu killed her two sons. So she took a vow, I will kill Indra. And so when she said to Kashyapa, her husband, she said, I want to do austerity. He said, very good, do austerity. Why do you want to do austerity? Because I want to kill Indra. So he thought, this is very bad. No? Now she's overcome with envy. So he said, okay, you do austerity, but you do it like this. So he gave her a Vaishnava Vratas. He said, you do this, you do this, you do this, you worship the Lord. So while she did it, while she performed the Vaishnava Vrata, the Pumsavana vow, which is in the final chapter, the 19th chapter of the sixth canto, then, because she was meditating on Krishna, all of her envy became purified, and she became completely pure. And even Indra, who tried to stop her, he also became purified. So everyone became purified. So this is the point of bhakti. Akama sava kama va moksha kama udaridhi. Even if we approach Krishna with mundane reasons or motivations, still if we approach Krishna, we will become purified of all of our defects.
So this Indra will be observing deity, whether she is following all the rituals properly or not. And when she forgets, if you forget any of this, then you know the opposite thing will happen. Then she will forget to follow two things, and then Indra will be observing this, trying to find fault, and it will happen eventually. Then he will enter the womb and then kill all this divine force. One is in the seven parts, and each part into another seven. So 49 marus will be gone.
So then next Monday we will begin Canto 7. So we'll hear about the second son of Iti, whose name was Hiranyakashipu, the most powerful demon in the history of the universe. And we'll see the appearance of very powerful canto. Prabhupada will quote a lot of verses from this canto. Next week I'll give you your KMVs, your key memory verses. If you look in the back of your book, it has all the KMVs listed, and I'll decide which ones to put on the exam, the first exam next week. There's many, many, many very powerful slogans which Prabhupada would quote from the seventh canto. Yeah, I've got them sitting right here, but I'll give them to you next week. The open book exams. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.